from 89.3 KPCC. This is Take Two. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino, filling in for A. Martinez, and a very happy Friday to all of you. Coming up, we look at the increasing number of California cities that are slicing up their local elections into district races to try to make local government look more like the population it represents. And we'll spin some of our favorite 2018 songs with a special New Year's Eve edition of our weekly music feature. But first, State of Affairs. That's our weekly peek at politics in the Golden State, and today we look ahead to 2019 for a glimpse of what we might expect from state lawmakers. With us to discuss is Marisa Lagos, political reporter for KQED. Hey, Marisa.
Good morning.
Also with us is Rafe Sonnenschein. He directs the Pat Brown Institute at Cal State LA. Welcome to you, Rafe.
Well, good morning.
Marisa, let's start with a breakdown of the political dynamics as we head into the next year. Democrats will occupy not just a super majority, but maybe a super duper majority, about three-fourths of the seats in both legislative houses. Of course, the governor also a Democrat. Meanwhile, in the House, California Republicans lost seven national seats. So how would you describe the state of the Republican Party in California right now?
I would say it's in flux. You know, I think that there is, in some quarters, some soul searching happening and questions about sort of how to make it a viable future. And I think in others, including really the party itself and the sort of party faithful, some digging in and sort of, you know, are like not wanting to change anything. And I think that this gets to the sort of conflict within the party, which is that if you go to a party convention and talk to the delegates and the people that are most active, you know, they really take a pretty hard right line on things. Many support President Trump. And if you talk to some of the people on the outside who have even left the party or have considered it, they say that, you know, there needs to be really some stock taken and a wholesale change so that they can start attracting, for example, more Latino voters, more Asian American voters, and just speak to a bigger part of the state population.
All right, Rafe, when you look at the Republican losses in the midterm, what do you think factored in more? What Republicans didn't do or what Democrats did do?
Well, Republicans couldn't do a thing because they were entirely running around Donald Trump. Donald Trump dominated the race, and it obviously hurt Republicans in California, devastated them. But they couldn't do a thing about it without losing their own party base. So they just hung on the ship that was listing all into the ocean and didn't make it. What Democrats did was not talk about Donald Trump very much, and they talked about health care, jobs, and what they should have been doing for years, which is talking about issues that just matter to people's lives. So the Democrats ran a pretty smart campaign, not just here, but nationwide. And Republicans were just in a hopeless situation because of Trump just overshadowing everything.
All right, Marisa, in the weeks following that election, several Republicans, including House Speaker Paul Ryan, criticized California's voting system, saying that, you know, it favors Democrats, alleging so-called ballot harvesting. What policies were they talking about, and did those actually make a difference in last month's election?
You know, they may have. I don't think that they were really, like, the silver bullet for Democrats, but we in California have embraced very sort of progressive electoral laws, including this ability for folks to take sealed absentee ballots and deliver them to a polling place. It used to be you had to be a family member or somebody in the household. A new law in the last few years kind of opened that up. And Democrats did use that in some areas to collect ballots that they think were probably friendly towards them and deliver them. But, you know, I think really Republicans are mad that they sort of got outgamed here. I think that Democrats did harness these new rules more effectively, although some Republicans did use this ballot harvesting themselves. You know, the numbers aren't in their favor. They have less than a quarter of registered voters now in the GOP. There are more no-party preference voters in California than Republican voters. And I think that, you know, if you lose and don't like how the game was played, you might sort of challenge the rules. But the bottom line was that there's no real allegations of voter fraud that have been, you know, found to be true. And so I think that this is really just, again, a case of sort of maybe being a sore loser a little bit.
All right, Rafe, it's hard to believe, but pretty soon here, coming up in 2019, we're going to start to see presidential campaigning for 2020, which means that President Trump will continue to loom even larger than he did in these midterms. Does that make it even harder for the state GOP to kind of do its own thing?
Well, that assumes the state GOP wants to do its own thing. Everybody assumes that the state party wants to change and is only waiting for an opportunity to get out from under President Trump's shadow. But don't forget, this is Donald Trump's party now. And those who don't like it are leaving the party. Those who are remaining are even more dedicated to holding on. Now, if Donald Trump loses his hold on the party, then I don't know. I'm not sure that makes things better for them. I think it would cast them adrift. But right now, they have basically tied themselves to him. And I don't think if things get bad for President Trump this year, though, I think there's going to be a real crisis for a lot of his supporters, especially if the legal issues turn out to be very substantial.
All right, I'm speaking with Marisa Lagos of KQED and Rafe Sonnenschein of Cal State LA. Marisa, let's look now at the priorities of California's majority party. The assumption is they can basically do whatever they want with such a wide majority. So what policies and proposals do you think we'll be hearing about more next year?
Well, I think our new governor, Gavin Newsom, and the Speaker of the Assembly, Anthony Rendon, really want to give a focus to early childhood education and expanding access to families that can't afford it. We've already seen some lawmakers introduce some bills on that, and I would expect the governor to really take a lead in that. We know that universal health care is an issue that really is going to dominate a lot of Democratic discussion going into 2020. And I do expect some conversation about that, although just realistically, there's not a lot of chance of getting that through because they would need okay from the feds. And I don't expect the Trump administration to be too friendly to that. And then there's the issues that they're going to have to deal with, homelessness and housing and the devastating wildfires we've seen. And so I think that, you know, as always, they will have to sort of grapple with the issues they want to tackle and the ones that they need to. And of course, trying to make all of those sort of fit together from a budgetary perspective.
All right, Rafe, speaking of budgetary perspective, in a recent interview, outgoing Governor Jerry Brown warned that the Democrats could wind up spending too much. Is there anyone around that could kind of keep that in check?
Well, that's a good question, because they're going to have to keep themselves in check, and the governor's going to have to keep them in check. But let me add something else. Jerry Brown always talked about not over-legislating. You don't have to have a legislative answer for every single problem you've identified. And an easy way to get in trouble for Democrats and to be easily satirized is to nitpick things to legislate about that become kind of a national joke. And I think Democrats are going to have to be aware that they're laying the agenda for the Democratic Party nationally going into 2020. If they do a great job in the next year or so, that really helps the Democrats nationally. If they do a bad job and end up not looking very good, that's not going to help the party nationally. So I think there'll be some national pressure on Democrats to do a great job here in California. I think they know that. And I don't think the governor is going to be a spendthrift. I think he won't be Jerry Brown, and he will carve his own path. But I don't think he wants to lose the whole surplus. I guarantee that.
All right. Briefly, both of you, top issue you're going to be watching next year, Marisa?
I think on the wildfires and utility liability, I mean, this issue of PG&E especially, it's just a huge question mark hanging over the entire state and not a simple one.
And Rafe?
The single most important policy issue in this country is health care, and what to do with the Affordable Care Act may be in legal trouble in the courts and what comes next. I think this is going to be the defining issue of American politics, and whatever California does, for better or worse, will help shape that.
All right. Marisa Lagos is a political reporter for KQED. Rafe Sonnenschein directs the Pat Brown Institute at Cal State LA. Thanks to both of you guys. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Back with more Take Two on 89.3 KPCC. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino in for A. Martinez. Not that long ago, it was fairly rare for California cities to elect council members based on districts rather than citywide. But as KPCC's Mary Plummer reports, that is rapidly changing.
Manuel Chavez is driving me around the streets of Costa Mesa, where he grew up.
All these streets, I mean, I walked as a kid to go to school and stuff, but I also was skateboarding, you know.
Since he grew up here, he knows which potholes need fixing and which dark streets need brighter lighting. And that's what he wants to fix as one of the city's newest city council members. He's only 23. He actually still lives with his parents.
When you grow up somewhere, you really know all the small things, like all the back paths, all the alleyways. I think that's actually one thing that I bring to benefit for the community is that, I mean, I literally was shaped here.
He was shaped here, and his neighbors voted him in.
One of the first Latinos also on city council.
Until this election, no Latino had ever been elected to Costa Mesa's city council. That's in a city where more than a third of residents are Latino. Now there are three. It's a notable shift. In November, Costa Mesa was among 57 cities across California that changed how they elect city councils. Instead of picking representatives to oversee the entire city, they sliced the city into districts and elected people like Chavez to represent just the neighborhoods near where they live.
That's kind of why we need district representation, because it gives us a chance to have a voice, a bigger voice than we would have before.
And that was exactly the goal of people who push for the change.
If you haven't been paying attention, we're actually in the middle of a revolution in local governance in California.
That's Katie Phillips of California Common Cause, a nonprofit that's helped some cities organize independent panels to draw up districts. Like many California cities, Costa Mesa made the switch to district elections after a legal challenge based on the California Voting Rights Act. The argument? Citywide elections were resulting in councils that failed to represent all neighborhoods, especially ones that were disadvantaged. Here's Phillips.
In a lot of cases, these lawsuits are responding to a real just startling lack of representation in local government, and they're just demanding that the status quo can't remain.
Costa Mesa's city council is officially nonpartisan, but under the new districts, Costa Mesa voters chose a Democratic majority. It's a huge shift for a council that voted to oppose California's sanctuary state law last spring. That vote came after several hours of heated debate, with anti-immigrant protesters waving American flags and those against the resolution arguing immigrants deserve protections. Palm Springs is also set to make the switch to district elections. The desert city is already notable in being the first city in the country to have an all-LGBT council. But council member Lisa Middleton says there's more work to do. In a city where Latinos make up more than a quarter of the population, every sitting council member is currently white.
In the 80 years that we have been a city, we've elected one African-American and one Latino to our city council. That is it for individuals of color.
She hopes the switch to district elections will redistribute some of that political power. But not all cities are making the shift as peacefully. Santa Monica has been fighting a lawsuit since 2016, arguing basically that they don't need it.
We're all of 8.3 square miles, so you can literally jog from one border to the other, depending on your fitness level, in about 30 to 40 minutes.
That's Santa Monica Mayor Gleam Davis.
We are one community. There are certainly issues that affect one neighborhood more than another. But one of the great things about Santa Monica is that we all figure that we're in this together.
Davis also points out voters in Santa Monica have twice rejected measures calling for the city to switch to district elections. Whether these lawsuits ultimately result in voters electing more diverse leaders is far from clear. Something to consider? Voters elected more people of color in fewer than half the cities that just made the switch. Covering politics, I'm Mary Plummer.
Joining us now in studio with more is KPCC's political correspondent, Mary Plummer. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Megan.
So in your story, we learned that fewer than half of the cities that recently switched to district elections actually saw more diverse councils. Why haven't the changes been more significant?
Yeah, you know, increasing diversity among city council members is a very complex issue, and each city in California is really unique. For one thing, people of color typically run for office at lower rates. Finding mentors to help with things like campaign fundraising can be a challenge. And another factor is just basic economics. I spoke with Rob Kroenke of the bipartisan consulting firm Grassroots Lab about this. The firm has been tracking the demographic changes when California cities switch to district elections. Here's what he said.
One of the strongest correlates to representation is levels of poverty.
So Kroenke explains that poor communities, which are often communities of color in California, just don't elect representatives at the municipal or state level in large numbers.
And we have one of the highest poverty rates in the nation. You know, if we can solve for that easy way out, solve poverty, I think you'll start to see a lot more representation.
Okay, a little bit of a barrier there. Just solve poverty, right?
Right, right. He's laughing there, of course, because increasing diversity on city councils is a very layered issue that will take time. One person I spoke to while reporting this story wondered if it could take a generation before we see significant changes here in California.
And this just doesn't refer to city councils, right?
Correct. School boards and some other governing bodies like community college districts are making the switch to district elections, often prompted by lawsuits. Of course, some cities have had these sorts of elections for a long time. Here in LA, that's one city that's already doing it and has been for quite a while. Also, San Diego and Long Beach are some examples.
So tell us more about why some cities are making this switch and how much is it costing taxpayers?
As we heard in the piece, lawsuits are driving a lot of the change, and how much that costs really depends on how the governing body chooses to respond. The city of Palmdale paid out $4.5 million plus interest to lawyers of three minority residents who sued the city. The city ultimately agreed to the settlement after years of legal battles. Another example, in Palm Springs, the council member I spoke to there told me the final defense cost will be around $30,000 paid to the plaintiff's counsel, so far less than they likely would have paid if they tried to fight it.
But there are some concerns that have been raised about how district elections might reshape city governments. What are they?
Yes, California city governments are incredibly diverse in size, demographics, and many other factors. So some argue district elections make a lot more sense in some places than others. One potential consequence, when your neighbors are voting for you, it could be harder to pass controversial initiatives that might benefit the entire city, but maybe upset some who live in your district. Housing for the homeless is one example. Under district elections, elected officials can also be ousted a lot easier because a recall takes far fewer votes and less community organizing than it would in a citywide model.
So if folks want to find out how things work in their particular city, where can they look?
So we will have a map up at LAS.com in the coming days. Also, if you're interested in how this is playing out in your community, you may want to think of this as an opportunity to get involved. District elections tend to lower the barrier depending on, you know, what stage your city is at. You may be able to help determine district maps, or you could even consider running for office yourself. In some of the smaller cities, district elections mean someone could potentially win an election with a very, very small number of votes.
That was KPCC's political correspondent, Mary Plummer. You can follow her on Twitter. Her handle is at Mary Plummer, P-L-U-M-M-E-R, not like the person that fixes the pipes. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you so much.
Back now with more Take 2 on 89.3 KPCC. I'm A. Martinez. Now, Megan McCarty-Carino will be back in just a few minutes, but first, I want to help you get in the mood for New Year's Take 2 style. All this year, we've brought you the hottest music from LA's newest artists for our weekly segment, Tuesday Reviews Day. So, as this year comes to a close, we want to look back at some of the hottest jams that got us all moving. Music supervisor Morgan Rhodes and Oliver Wang from soul-sides.com are with me. Hello, you two.
How are you?
How's it going, eh?
Good, good. Now, each of you have chosen three songs that made us bob our heads in 2018, including this jam, courtesy of Morgan. Who's this, Morgan?
This is Kamasi Washington. The song is called V Lua V Soul. And to summarize this album, Heaven and Earth, in three words, I'd call it cinematic, orchestral, and heavenly, and should be listened to with your eyes closed.
For your love, I'll till the earth for you. Don't you know my words are true?
This is, of course, the follow-up to his celebrated album, The Epic. He is Grammy nominated. He was a part of Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, and furthermore is a native son of LA's jazz community, most of which was birthed in Leimert Park at places like Fifth Street Dick's and the World Jazz Stage. And he makes music for those who love Pharoah Saunders, love Pharoah Monch, but also need to Google both of those names. So his music is cross-generational. It's a mix of spiritual jazz and free jazz and hip-hop. It is sweeping and orchestral and large and moving, and a part of the tradition that he started years ago by growing up right here in the city.
All right, Oliver, you're up, and you brought us a song by Kuko. What's this?
Well, even if it is the dead of winter, there's at least one LA artist who can still make you feel like it's hotter than July, and that is Kuko, and this is the song appropriately entitled Sunnyside. I brought him in just the other month for Tuesday Reviews Day. He's a young singer-songwriter out of Hawthorne, which people might forget is the original home of the Beach Boys. And Kuko also makes music for Endless Summers. And provided it's a song called Sunnyside, so you know where his head is at with it. But all of his music has this dreamy, drifting, and ever so slightly melancholy feel to it, which to me is really what captures the sound of summer, except that, again, he can deliver this all year round.
And I'm telling you, I said it back then, I'll say it again, this would be what Richie Valens sounds like if he was singing a love song in 2018, 2019.
No doubt.
Yeah. Sure. All right, back to you, Morgan Rhodes. What else do you got for us?
I have brought in Georgia Ann Muldrow and the title track to this beautiful Cosmic Soul album, Overload.
This lifetime trust up in you.
Ideally with this, you're already moving, because if you move right off the bat, it's going to make you move no matter what. You might hurt something.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so appropriately, because she is nice with the beats. Certainly a triple threat. She's a singer, songwriter, producer, and grew up just like Kumasi Washington did here in the LA scene.
Awesome.
In 2008, when Los Angeles was becoming the hot place for future and avant-garde soul, she was one of the pioneers, one of the architects. So you can't mention any of the movement of left field soul without mentioning Georgia Ann Muldrow. This album is lovely, and I call it lovely because it's all about love. Love of self, love of community, love of her family. She is a goddess, often compared to Alice Coltrane. I think that's appropriate. Alice Coltrane with a side of beats.
Oliver, all right, back to you.
So Morgan and I actually first met at KPCC working together. We now do a podcast together. And we recently had the great Macy Gray on talking about Kanye. But it was my excuse to listen to Macy's new album, Ruby. And it begins with this song, Buddha, which I cannot get enough of.
If it's what you fear, my advice is that you're showing. So baby, cry. If you're high, how will I know it? And I pray every night that my dreams come true. Will I finally be happy if they do? Hurry, hurry up, my days are numbered.
I don't know to what extent Macy was channeling anxieties about current events, but when she sings, Hurry, Hurry Up, My Days Are Numbered, I really, really feel that. And I'm assuming that the title of the song, Buddha, is supposed to evoke a sense of how we are trying to make sense with things as they are at a time when everything else can feel out of control, that it's useful to ground yourself in that reminder. And as her and her backup singers make clear, I'm all right now. And some days, maybe that's just enough to acknowledge.
All right, Morgan, what do you got for us now?
I've got Tori Kelly, who's a pop singer, but is revisiting her gospel roots. Her album's called Hiding Place, and this jam is called Masterpiece.
Oh, I'm so glad.
When you look at me, do you see a work of art in the making? Sketch of what I'll be.
This album is short and sweet. It is contemporary gospel with pop appeal.
I was going to say, I was going to wear my Sunday best for this thing.
Well, you should when you listen to it. This one is produced by none other than the crown prince of contemporary gospel. That would be Kirk Franklin, a multi-Grammy winner, Kirk Franklin. It started off as just a few songs that he wrote, flew her out to Dallas to hear them, and then it became an album. She started out playing in the church, auditioned for American Idol, didn't make it all the way, but that's cool. She's going to be honored at the 64th. Awards, as this album is Grammy nominated. It reminds me a lot of CeCe Winans' album of last year, Let Them Fall in Love, because it takes gospel to higher heights. It has a multi-generational appeal, same message with a twist on it, which I like. It takes advantage of her youth, of her pop sensibilities, and this amazing instrument, which is her voice. And so from Riverside to the big city, she's done the thing on this album. It made my best because it just gives a different take on the music that I grew up with.
Gospel music proves that you can praise God and groove at the same time.
Absolutely. I'm a witness.
All right, Oliver, what do you got now?
We got rapper G. Yamazawa, originally from Durham, North Carolina, but he's made L.A. his home, and this is Rap Money off of his album Money Is Time.
He writing raps, but that poet still snapped, don't it? Booking shows, looking forward to the rap money.
Rap money.
And all the students in the back love me.
Back love me.
Because I move forward like a crash dummy.
Crash dummy.
G
is one of my favorite hip-hop discoveries of the year. I got to give credit to my man Hua Su, who actually put me up on both Yamazawa and Kuko. And with G Yamazawa, he can flow for days. He is woke AF, but not didactic, which is a tough balance to achieve. And there's just so much energy and passion to every verse that he pens. I just think he's incredibly talented, and I am very much looking forward to every new project that he is putting out.
All right, one more thing for both of you, considering that 2019 is right around the corner. Anything you guys are looking forward to in the new year? Morgan.
Music from Moses Sumney. He's going to release the follow-up to A Romanticism in 2019. And also one of my favorite artists is Toro y Moi. He'll be releasing something in the middle of January, so cannot wait to hear both of those.
Oliver?
You know, I'm looking forward to being surprised, as I have been this year and every past year, by the stuff that I didn't know that I was looking for until I find it.
And as we know, no one puts Oliver in a corner. No one. Oliver Waring from soul-sides.com, music supervisor Morgan Rhodes, thank you very much and Happy New Year.
Yeah,
you
too,
so
eh?
Much. Nice to see you again, Oliver.
Nice to see you too, Morgan.
Booking shows, looking forward to the rap money.
Rap money.
And all the students in the back love me.
Back love me.
Because I move forward like a crash dummy.
Crash dummy.
Don't misuse your blessings or miscount your whereby.
Whereby.
It's getting hot in her. It is shots to Durham, but I am out this whereby.
And finally, let's get the New Year's weekend started early.
I'm KPCC's Leo Duran, and Megan, I might still be recovering from a Christmas cookie binge, but I'm going to call that carbo loading for all to do this New Year's
weekend.
Great
energy source.
Yeah, so there's a lot. First up, the Rose Parade happens on New Year's Day in Pasadena, but you can actually get a preview today through Sunday. There's an event called Sip and Savor, starting at $15. You'll be able to preview the parade floats being assembled, plus, Megan, that sip part, there's going to be food, wine, beer, and entertainment.
Is it all flower-based?
I do not know that, but it should be, or you can just grab some of those extra flowers, put them in whatever you need to. For something more kid-friendly, head to the Santa Monica Public Library tomorrow starting at 10:30. It's the 14th annual LA International Children's Film Fest. There'll be nearly 100 short films from around the world, from animation to live action to documentaries. It's designed for all ages, and several filmmakers will be in attendance for your kids to talk to. This one's free, by the way.
Nice. Get them into those bad question FAQs early. You know the ones that ask the bad questions at those.
Yes.
Long questions.
There's also a chance for the whole family to enjoy the cold this weekend, too. In Costa Mesa, from now through next weekend, is the Winterfest OC. This event features 40,000 square feet of fun activities like ice skating, ice tubing, a festival of light like tunnels and more. Tickets start at $10 for that one. Yeah, so if you actually want to enjoy the cold as opposed to get away from it.
I feel like there's no better way to troll your family members, you know, that live in cold places
than ice tubing photos with palm trees. Snow. Yeah. And then finally, one thing to think about doing this weekend is an end of the year hike. You can do it with some friends early tomorrow morning at 6:30. Yes, if you want to get up that early. Because starting at the Griffith Park merry-go-round, this group called Everyone's Hike, they want you to meet up with them so you can try make the trek up to Wisdom Tree together. This one's free. Just wear silver or purple so you can all find each other and wear party hats too.
All right.
Now, there's much more to do than just that. Find our whole list of events on laist.com. That is laist.com.
KPCC's Leo Duran. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Megan.